You're listening to Red Eye on Vancouver Cooperative Radio, CFRO, at 102.7 FM.
On January 12th, an earthquake shattered Haiti. Thousands of buildings crumbled, hundreds of thousands of people died, millions now are desperate for food, medical aid, and shelter. While it is reported that $2 billion has been donated or pledged to help Haitians, 2 weeks later, this help still has not been distributed effectively to relieve the suffering. Roger Annis is a member of Haiti Solidarity BC. He's coordinator with the Canada-Haiti Action Network, and he joins me in the studio to update us. Good morning. Welcome, Roger.
Thank you. It's good to be with you.
The U.S. and Canada have sent thousands of troops to Haiti. The media report dangers of looting. What is the connection?
Well, I think that the emergency relief operation to date has been very disappointing. Many Haitians still have seen nothing by way of medical, food, or water assistance, shelter as well is very, very critical. And we're 2.5 weeks now following the earthquake. It's been a, you know, a flawed relief operation on different levels, and one of the really complicating factors in it is the decision to militarize the relief effort, and so we are not at all satisfied with what we've seen take place, and we're very concerned about the future now for Haiti if this pattern continues.
What sort of numbers of troops are in Haiti?
Well, it's approaching 30,000 now. That's in addition to the 9,000 police and soldiers of the UN military mission that were already in Haiti. So the United States has committed about 20,000 troops. You mentioned the 2,000 figure from Canada, and then thousands from other countries. And, you know, this is not a war going on. This is a humanitarian operation that's required. And so what Haiti needs is it needs emergency relief teams. Now it needs all of the medical and other life-saving and life-sustaining infrastructure that's required. Because remember, we have rains, heavy rains coming in Haiti soon, and there are people, hundreds of thousands of people living without shelter who are now vulnerable to waterborne disease, to the mosquito population that's going to explode when it rains, and they don't even have basic protection from the rain. So there's a critical need that is still required here, and I think a lot of international pressure has to be brought to bear to ask some critical questions about why it's taken so long for the emergency relief to come into place, and why has this large military machine been put in place that has become such an obstacle to the effective delivery of aid.
Is the media stories over and over again, we get two kinds. One is, we're worried about looting, and then you get reporters saying, I've seen no violence, I've seen no chaos, people are very patient, people are trying to get their needs. So why this kind of double messaging?
Well, I think the stories of looting come from prejudice, predetermined prejudice on the part of largely those that have been dominating Haiti in these recent years, politically and economically, because, as you mentioned, the Haitian people have acted with nothing but dignity and courage and patience and stoicism in the face of the calamity that's faced them. And I think it's a real disservice to the Haitian people themselves and to the aid effort. All of these stories that have been perpetrated by political, military, police, and sometimes by media figures, although thankfully, as you said, many journalists of good conscience and honesty, including from our own national broadcaster, who have been on the ground in Haiti, have told the truth, which is that the Haitian people have responded with nothing but human dignity in the face of this catastrophe. I'm afraid that what these prejudices about looting and so forth reveal is just the ongoing prejudice against the Haitian people has been such an obstacle to their social and economic development, and has played a real role in the difficulty of getting aid delivered effectively, because apparently the authorities from Canada, the United States, and other countries that have gone there believe their own propaganda that they face great dangers in the streets of Haiti. And if you recall the front page photo that was on the Globe and Mail 9 days ago, and it showed the first sortie of Canadian sailors going into the town of Laogan the day after the arrival of their warship. And remember, this is 1 week after the earthquake, and it's a patrol of 10 heavily armed Canadian sailors walking through the streets of a shattered city. Thankfully, the next day, as we learned from reports on the ground there, they put their guns away and said, well, this is ridiculous. People here need aid, not guns. But I'm afraid that this has been the kind of mentality that's governed the aid operation, and in particular its military component.
The U.S. Controls the airport in the capital city of Port-au-Prince. A lot of reporting focuses on Port-au-Prince. What's happening in the countryside?
Well, this is where the aid delivery has been the least effective, because the consequence of the militarization of the airport meant that very critical humanitarian relief was either not able to be landed, or it was difficult to get it out of the airport. What should have happened within hours of the earthquake is the establishment of centers inland from the airport on soccer fields or any empty space that could be provided, and then begin to build that up as centers where people can come for shelter, for medical aid, and the like. But this was not done. And instead, the airport was simply used as the only funneling point and got all jammed up. And this was also true for the outlying towns. Laogan, for example, and also Jacmel, where Canada sent its two warships, well, they didn't arrive until a week after the earthquake. And there was very little in those towns until then. There was a contingent of Cuban doctors that arrived in Laogan, and there were other medical volunteers from other countries that did get in there much before the military operation arrived. And so, you know, this has been altogether a deeply flawed effort, and really critical questions need to be asked now.
Historically, are there precedents for this? What I would say from what you've described, military occupation under the guise of reconstruction.
Well, this is our concern going ahead, is that we're seeing a repeat of familiar patterns in Haiti. You know, people have observed the tremendous poverty of the country and the lack of an infrastructure with which to deal with something like a natural disaster of this scale. Well, this is not accidental. Most of the casualties, I would say, through this earthquake are the product of human-made policy. The most important one is the destruction of Haiti's agriculture that has gone on over these past decades by the policies of forced importations of subsidized food from the United States and Europe in particular, which has meant that it's more and more difficult for Haitians on the land to make a living, so they fled into the cities, including Port-au-Prince, with the consequence that we saw from the earthquake. We have seen the overthrow of two elected governments in Haiti in the past 25 years. And these past 25 years are really the opening of Haiti's modern political history, because prior to 1986, they lived through a 30-year nightmare of the Duvalier family tyranny. And so these policies of forcing open Haiti's markets such that it can't develop a national market, of overthrowing governments that in both cases in Haiti were committed to social justice, but that drew the ire of the big powers of the world. You know, this is why we've seen the human tragedy on such a scale after this earthquake. It's not the earthquake alone that has produced this.
So the large numbers of people living in Port-au-Prince, the capital, without any real planning for their accommodation and services and infrastructure, etc., as a result of the destruction of agriculture through these economic policies from abroad.
Yes, certainly. The population of Port-au-Prince is over 2 million right now. By the end of the 1970s, it was somewhere around 250,000, which is probably what the city can accommodate geographically, but you know, tens and hundreds of thousands of people have had to come into the city because of what I call the destruction of Haiti's agricultural economy by policies coming from the wealthy countries.
Now, I've read a report, and maybe you can illuminate this a little bit more, that the United Nations has granted the United States the power of authority over the airport or perhaps elsewhere. I mean, who is the United Nations to grant, and what is this little card shuffle?
Well, that's a very important question, and it points to Haiti's recent history. The second overthrow of elected government in Haiti was perpetrated in February of 2004. For the second time, its elected president, Jean-Bertrand Aristide, was overthrown. He lives in South Africa now in exile. And it was the United Nations Security Council that sanctioned the overthrow of his elected government. The United States, Canada, and France went to the Security Council on February 28, 2004, and asked for permission to land troops in Haiti to assist the paramilitaries who were engaged in overthrowing the elected government. The paramilitaries couldn't have accomplished the dirty deed without the help from abroad, and so this was sanctioned by the Security Council. And 2 months later, the Security Council formally established a military and police mission in Haiti, which goes under the name MINUSTA, in which Canada has been a very significant participant. And that UN mission has been in Haiti ever since, and it's the parallel power to the sovereign Haitian government. The Haitian government is a very weak government because it lacks funding. It lacks a certain political authority among the population because of this heavy foreign presence that has interfered with Haiti's sovereign political affairs. And so, sadly, the role in the history in the recent times of the United Nations Security Council has been a very poor one. So they certainly have no authority to hand anything of Haiti's national territory over to whoever it may be. This was something that was forced on the country by the very dire circumstances of the earthquake and the days following it, and I think it's just a shameful and just another chapter in this recent history of foreign powers stripping away Haiti's national sovereignty.
Aristide has said he wants to return. What is the possibility of that?
Well, I think it's really in the hands of Haiti's government under René Préval, but also the foreign authorities who have an even greater role now that they're playing in Haiti's affairs. For former President Aristide, to return to the country, he has to be assured of his security, and he has to be assured that he will be treated with the respect of office that is due to him, and he has not been made that offer to our knowledge, and this is something that has to change because he can play a very important role in the whole process of pulling the country together for the reconstruction effort that is required, because the reconstruction is going to be a big challenge to Haiti's sovereignty, whether or not it's going to lose even more of its sovereignty through this, or whether the reconstruction could actually aid the country to get back on its feet. That's right now a very big question.
You have a number of events coming up relating to bringing information about Haiti. Can you just give us a brief sketch of what people might attend?
Sure. I'd like to invite your listeners in the Vancouver area to come to several events in the coming week. Tuesday, 6 p.m. at the Global Lounge at the University of British Columbia. 6 p.m., a screening of the film Aristide and the Endless Revolution. Thursday, 7 p.m., at a public forum organized by the Success Foundation. That will be at 28 West Pender Street, 7 p.m. at the Choi Hall. That's a panel of speakers. Another panel of speakers the following evening, Friday, February 5th, at 5288 Joyce Street in the Collingwood neighborhood. And then finally on Saturday, a very big gala fundraising event that's being organized by Haiti Solidarity BC and by people in the entertainment industry at the Michael J. Fox Theater in Burnaby on McPherson Avenue. The doors were open there at 6 p.m. for a silent auction, and then entertainment and some talks and reports from Haiti at 7 p.m. and going until 10 p.m. So I really encourage people to come out. And if you haven't already made your donation to earthquake relief in Haiti, and especially to the medical organizations that are doing such important work, come out and make it there at our benefit on Saturday. Or if you made one already, maybe it's time to make another one because the needs are very critical in the months ahead.
Thank you very much for coming in with that, Roger. It's really important.
Oh, well, thank you for having me.
I've been speaking with Roger Annis. He's a member of Haiti Solidarity BC, and he's coordinator with the Canada-Haiti Action Network.